Please turn in your Bibles to Matthew chapter 6 once again. Matthew chapter 6. I'll be turning there too. I forgot to put my bookmarker there. Read a story, a little anecdote once in the Sword of the Lord in which this man talked about that the church he went to when he was growing up, and the preacher, he liked to reference lots and lots of verses, and he hardly gave anyone any time to get to them, you know, just be one after another. And he was a little boy, the man who wrote the article. He grew up to become a preacher, but at the time he was a little boy. And one day, when before the services started, he walked up to the podium, and he saw the preacher's Bible and had all of these paper clips stuck in the Bible, colored paper clips. And he said he reached up and he pulled them all out. He said then the people had plenty of time finding the verses. Matthew chapter 6, verses 7 and 8. This is just going to be a negative on what not to do when you pray. And then next week we're actually going to be getting into what's often called the Lord's Prayer. And we'll be talking about, that'll be the positive to the negative he presents here. But when ye pray, use not vain repetitions as the heathen do. For they think that they shall be heard for their much speaking. The word heathen, just wanted to identify, you know, who he's referring to is the Gentiles. This is the word from which the underlying Greek word is the word from which we get ethnic. the heathen are the ethnoi, the Jews spoke of the world in two groups. The Jews and everybody else, the nations. Both in Greek and in Hebrew, the Jews would just refer to the non-Jews as being the nations. And Christ here is telling his disciples, you know, he had just told them previously not to make a public demonstration about their prayer. Forgive me, I got it. Scratchy throat. And now he tells him not to use, King James translates it, vain repetition. It's one word in Greek, batalageo. And the second part, lageo, just means to speak. And then bata, that actually doesn't mean anything in Greek. It was a man's name. What I read was that he was a poet who his style of poetry was noted for lots of repetition. He'd say things over and over again, and sometimes just with slightly different wording, repeat things he had already said. So lots of repetition. And then the other phrase at the end of verse 8, verse 7, they're much speaking. The much speaking is also one word, palulegao. And palu is the word from which we get poly, as in, you know, polysyllabic and different, you know, poly whatever, meaning many. And so this meant much speaking, just like the King James has it. But the way that it was used meant meaningless, babbling, droning, where you're just speaking on and on, but you're not really saying anything. And then he says that the heathen do this, thinking that they will be heard by doing this, the repetition and the speaking on and on and on in their prayers. What's interesting about that is that it's not the idea of here as in, Oh, I finally noticed what you said, but it is it's a compound of the verb to hear, and its meaning is to assent to. So it means I heard and I assent to what you said. So Christ here says that they think by doing this that the divine power will give assent to what they're asking for. What this is this is actually something that seems to be endemic to mankind. Every religion in the world has this ritualistic prayer where they'll say a prayer over and over and over again. They'll just say the same thing over and over and over again. In Tibetan Buddhism, it's gotten to such a point that they actually inscribed the prayers on these cylinders that are on these pillars at the Buddhist temples. And supplicants just come in and go, spin it. And that's them praying. It just saves time that way. I read a funny quote, it struck me as humorous, by John Calvin about this repetitive praying, this ritualized repetitive praying. He says, "We find popery to be so deeply imbued with this error that it believes the efficacy of prayer to lie chiefly in talkativeness." But, you know, if you have any familiarity with Catholics, you know, you'll hear about, the priest saying, you know, say 10 Hail Marys. And they have these prayers that they memorize, like the Paternoster and the Ave Maria, which is the Hail Mary. And they will say them over and over and over again. Yeah, with the rosary beads. You know what's interesting to me is that you look at the practices of Catholicism. If you leave, I was talking to a friend of mine. I says, so bizarre that if you were to take a peasant from medieval Europe and transplant him to medieval Japan, once he learned the language, everything else to him would be just about the same. They have monks. They have prayer beads. The practices, the society practices were almost the same. And it's interesting that you find this. Why do we find this worldwide, that in every religion that you look at, this idea of a ritualized, repetitive praying, you know, if you say the right formula over and over and over again, that this will get you what you want? You may not be aware of this, but this is magical thinking. This is occult thinking. If you read about actual ancient magical practices, this is exactly what they would do. They would have these ritualized things that they would say, and they would say them over and over and over again. And this was believed to be able to accomplish what they want. Magic is the belief that the use of certain prescribed actions and or substances will bypass the normal laws of cause and effect. That you can somehow force your will upon the world without going through the normal, you know, laws of cause and effect. That is magical thinking. And it is easy to fall into. I find even myself that I tend to fall into, instead of doing real communication with my Lord, saying a rote pattern of words that I'm not really thinking about. Pastor Weigel has shared us an illustration a few different times over the years of a man uses this illustration to illustrate this very idea of an unconscious, unthinking prayer. The man had been involved in the work of a great repetitious work of counting pennies. So, and he would count to 10 and then start over. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And just keep going. And sat down to pray, and without thinking about it, because he wasn't really thinking about praying, he was just kind of going into what we like to call autopilot, you know. He sits down, bows his head, folds his hands, and goes, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And so I find myself falling into that, not really thinking of it, but treating prayer like some sort of muttered incantation that will somehow please God. And we're told not to do that, not to think that. Our words aren't going to accomplish anything. Saying them over and over again. I think, you know what's really funny about this is that kind of thinking that saying it over and over again will somehow get God to acquiesce to what you want is also a very childish way of thinking. Because think about what children do. Mommy, can I have a cookie? Can I have a cookie? Mommy, can I have a cookie? Mommy, can I have a cookie? Mommy, can I have a cookie? Yeah. How many times do we see children doing things like that? Mommy, 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 mama, mama, mom, 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 mommy, mommy, mommy. I don't let my kids do that. They do it twice. I'm like, no, you do not repeat yourself. You say it one time and then you wait patiently for a response. No repetition. Don't do that. But it's, yes, ma'am.
Isn't it common, though, for us to pray for the same things daily?
Yes, but how are you doing it? Are you thinking about it? Is this real communication? Or is this the man bowing his head, closing his eyes, folding his hands, and going, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Not really thinking. You know, I have gotten to work before and realized I hadn't paid attention. You know, I'm like, how did I get here? I was driving, apparently. You know, because I go into autopilot. We want to avoid that. We want to avoid treating prayer like a ritual, like some muttered incantation, as if the words themselves hold some kind of special power to change God's mind. God, the Lord Jesus here, shows the foolishness of this thinking at the very end because he says, for your Father already knows what you need. Now you might ask, if he knows what we need, why do we need to pray? And that actually goes beyond our text, but I will address it briefly. God doesn't need you to pray. God already knows everything and lacks nothing, either in knowledge or in capacity. So why do we need to pray? Because the reality is there's only one provider, and that is God. And we need him. And so prayer is a way where we voluntarily place ourselves in a position of acknowledging that he alone is God, he alone is Lord, he alone is provider. Now the Bible also tells us, though, that sometimes, even though God knows all our needs, and all our desires that sometimes he chooses not to grant us because we don't ask. And I found myself thinking, why? Well, it's that taking it for granted. It's that maybe it's the attitude of, well, I don't need to ask God for food because I'm the one who went out and earned it. I'm the one who went out and earned the money. Why do I need to tell God thank you for this? Prayer is needful for us, not for God. It is needful for us because it puts us in a position of, you know, where we are reminded and we consciously are placing ourselves in that position of, I am the supplicant, you are the provider, I need you, because that is reality. And for our good, so that we don't lose track of that, sometimes when we fail to go to God in prayer, God withholds that which he would otherwise give us because we need to remember that he alone is the provider, that there is no other. All right. I think we're actually done. I didn't want to go too heavy because, you know. Yes, sir.
Well, to me, the interesting thing, how the heathen think, those untrained, those who had no revelation, and how we think we're talking to our Father.
Oh, I almost forgot. I had an illustration of the heathen practice actually written down, recorded for us in 1 Corinthians chapter 18, verse 26, when Elijah went against the priests of Baal at Mount Carmel. The priests of Baal, it says, they called on Baal from morning until noon, saying, O Baal, hear us. Here they are for something like 4 hours or more, repetitively calling on their God, saying, O Baal, hear us. Throwing themselves about, and says, cutting themselves and crying out, but saying it over and over again, chanting. And I can imagine. I one time saw a video of these Islamists. It wasn't ISIS, it was pre-ISIS. But they were chanting Allah Akbar. And that's God is great. And then another time they were chanting in Arabic, there is no God but Allah, just over and over and over again, just doing it over and over and over again. And they got themselves, they started, huh?
These are Sufis. They are called Sufis. Sufis. And they go around and they say the same thing thousands of times.
And I saw in this mosque, this video, this mosque, where they were doing this, saying the thing over and over and over again. And they started out really calm, but then by the end, they were getting really like crazy. And the imam, he started beating himself in the head as he's saying it over and over again. And they're all like just getting worked up into this wild state.
What do you suppose that pounding in the head did for him?
Imagine a headache. Yeah, but what we're supposed to be doing is actually speaking to God, going to our Father and communicating to him, not saying ritual words that don't mean anything, but actually speaking to him like we would to another person. All right, yes, ma'am.
I like that song. It talks about keeping it simple. It's a whisper of prayer in the morning, evening, and noon. Why? To keep your heart in tune. God doesn't need informed. We're the ones that need to be in tune with him. And that way of submitting our hearts to him in prayer does that.
Shortest prayer I ever made was in an emergency situation. I was on 34th Street here in Indianapolis, and I had turned turned on to 34th from Dandy Trail, and it was icy, and my car went into a spin. I didn't realize how icy it was. My car went into a spin, and I cried out. I saw what was coming, and I went, "Lord, telephone pole." I was about ready to hit head on, you know, like hit the front, but I managed to somehow miss it, and the rear end swung around and ended up losing my right rear tire. You came and, I don't know, if, no. I crippled the car over to your place, and because of that, the fender dug through the wall of the tire. And you helped me, you had a big pry bar, and you helped me bend the fender back out so we could get a tire on.
But you missed the pole.
Well, I did. Yeah, but that's the shortest prayer I ever made. Lord, telephone pole. But, you know, we need to not treat prayer like a ritual. And it's easy. It's easy to fall into it, just like it is. It's easy to drive without consciously thinking about it. It's easy to get into ritualized prayer. If you catch yourself, stop and start over. And think about it. There have been times where I've been in a hurry and I'll shoot out a prayer and then I'm off to work. And I realize, I was like, you know what? I wasn't talking to God. I was just mumbling words. And I'll start over, because God doesn't say anything that it's wrong for me to pray while driving. I keep my eyes open. But I take the time to actually speak to God and ask him to help me with the challenges of the day so that I can face them to his honor and glory.